I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. It's a good day for a chokehold. That's what a police officer wrote on Facebook, one of the countless offensive comments and images examined by the Plain View Project that disparaged, insulted, and threatened African Americans, Muslims, women, and others that officers are sworn to protect. The project examined several years of Facebook posts by police from 8 jurisdictions, including 330 officers here in Philadelphia. I read through many of them, and trust me, they are deeply disturbing, wishing violence on civilians, equating people of color with dogs and savages, calling for death to Islam. Here in Philadelphia, Police Commissioner Richard Ross said he was very troubled by the report and revealed that Internal Affairs has been investigating whether policy violations had occurred. John McNesby, president of the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 5, said he strongly condemns violence and racism in any form. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, who will be joining us shortly, said the post could preclude the officers involved from testifying in court. We asked Emily Baker White to join us. She's a lawyer. She is executive director of the Plain View Project. In fact, this investigation began when she worked at the Federal Community Defender Office here in Philadelphia. Emily Baker White, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
What was the post that got this investigation started?
Well, so I first came across troubling content posted by police officers on Facebook when I did work at the Federal Community Defender Office in Philadelphia. I was investigating a claim that had to do with police brutality, and I found the public Facebook pages of several officers who might have been involved in the case I was working on. And one of those officers had posted a meme, and the meme showed a police dog baring its teeth, raring to go after something, being restrained by an officer. And over top of that was the caption, "I hope you run, he likes fast food."
Wow. Wow. And that's what got you started.
That's what got me started. So at that point, I was working at the Federal Community Defender Office. I took a screenshot of that post, sent it around to my team. But I think in part because the image was a meme, it didn't look like something that that officer had created himself. It looked like a thing that he had gotten from somewhere on the internet. And that made me ask the question, how prevalent is this and how much more of this might there be out there? And so that question led me later on to establish the Plain View Project to try to answer that question.
And you looked at not only Philadelphia, York, PA, Phoenix, Dallas, St. Louis, Twin Falls, Denison, Texas, and Lake County, Florida. Why those police jurisdictions?
So we thought about two things for the most part. The first was we prioritized communities that had ongoing conversations about the police and the community's relationship. So obviously that conversation has been ongoing in Philadelphia as well as St. Louis, obviously, Dallas and Phoenix. These are communities that have been talking about this for a while. We also, though, wanted geographic diversity and size diversity. We didn't want only to look at large urban areas. We didn't only want to look at small or rural areas. We wanted a snapshot that would look something like what America looks like.
Let me, you had some very interesting comments even before beginning to read the post, which I did read yesterday, not all of them, but enough to get a sense of what this project really looked at. And it says multiple meanings. These posts were selected because the viewpoints expressed could be relevant to important public issues such as police practices, public safety, and the fair administration of the law. The posts and comments are open to various interpretations. We do not know what a poster meant when he or she typed them. We only know that when we saw them, they concerned us. Obviously, this is the criteria that you use to publish these Facebook comments. How should we understand your level of concern and what the criteria is for that?
Sure. So when we were deciding whether to include a post, we're asking one question, which is whether that post could affect public trust in policing, whether it could suggest something about how an officer or other officers do their job. And clearly, a lot of these posts could have different meanings. And we encourage people hearing about this to take a look at the database and decide for yourself. Some of these images may not trouble you. But to us, the question was whether a post could affect public trust. And that's different than whether we thought a person posting intended to convey prejudice or violence or anything else. And for example, we included Confederate flags in the database. And many people say the Confederate flag is a statement of heritage, not hate. But many other people think it is a racist symbol. And so if police officers are displaying the Confederate flag on their public Facebook pages, it's reasonable to think that that could have an impact on the police department's ability to do its job, regardless of the intent of the person posting the image.
As I said, I looked through a lot of them, and clearly, I mean, some of them are frankly horrifying and racist and Islamophobic and on and on. And some, I would say, are what look like people just venting. And I, you know, it's a tricky and very, I think, subjective criteria to figure out whether someone should lose their job over this or whether the public should feel somehow unsafe with police officers posting these posts on Facebook.
Sure. So we're absolutely not advocating that any particular person should be fired. We think departments should review and investigate the post. And we think we should have a larger conversation about policing and what that means and what it should mean and what police culture should look like. But we are not advocating any specific punishment for any officer. That's not why we did this.
You looked at Philadelphia. It's a police force of about 6,500, so obviously a large urban police force. There were something like 330 officers, rank and file, and some, you know, higher level officers identified in this. Was there something unique about Philadelphia?
I would say no. So it's important to note that of the approximately 6,500 officers in Philadelphia, we only found Facebook pages for approximately one-fifth of those officers. It appears, as far as I know, that most Philadelphia police officers and most police officers in all jurisdictions we looked at simply don't use Facebook. And we included content from around 330 officers, but we found the Facebook pages for 1,073 current Philadelphia police officers. Now, that's out of, like you said, a force of around, you know, 6,500.
Yeah.
And so we found, you know, the approximately 330 out of 1,073 is a concerning proportion, but we have no idea what everyone who doesn't use Facebook would say if they were using Facebook. And we were also looking only at posts that were made publicly. I have no idea what folks are saying on Facebook when they share that content only with their friends. And so this is not a statistical study. It's not a quant study, right? And I think it's a collection of troubling images. There are obviously a lot of them. Some of them are very disturbing. But I don't want anyone to take away the idea that this somehow quantifies a percentage of the department that feels a certain way or thinks a certain way, because for several reasons that I've just outlined, that's not what we did.
What would you like the Philadelphia Police Department to do? And I'm wondering whether some of these other police departments are doing what is happening in Philadelphia, which is taking a look at these posts and trying to figure out what is meant by them and what, if anything, should be done with the officers who posted them.
Absolutely. We hope police departments take a look and make changes in how they hire and train officers. And we hope that police departments hold officers accountable for their behavior on and off duty. These public statements can impact civilian trust, and it can impact police departments' ability to protect and serve us all. And so I think obviously accountability is where most people go initially, and we do need better accountability for especially some of the more disturbing of these statements and posts. But I think social media can bring out the worst in all of us. And some of what we see are long comment threads that involve numerous officers. And it seems like someone may post something edgy, something that might be a little bit violent or maybe a little bit apparently discriminatory. And then underneath that, the comments will just get worse and worse, and they'll ramp up harder and harder. And if one person says, yeah, I would have beaten that guy too, then another guy might say, well, I would have beaten him harder, and I would have, you know, kicked his face, and I would have shot him. And the further you get down in the comment thread, the more sort of piling on you see. And I think that disrupting feedback loops like that can be really important for police departments. Instead of having a culture where folks need to one-up each other and say something more violent or more extreme, what I would love to see is a culture within police departments where a supervisor will call an officer in who said something like this, and it won't be about whether the officer is going to be punished or fired or whatever, but he'll say, hey, this isn't what we're about. This isn't helping. This isn't good for policing. This isn't going to make it easier for us to protect the public. It's going to make it harder for us to protect the public. And if there's more talk like that within police departments, I think we may see sort of less of this piling on.
What was interesting, and BuzzFeed took a look at this report as well, finding that it wasn't just rank and file, that there were higher-ups within the Philadelphia Police Department who were part of this. And there is something about social media that does seem to invite piling on, that does not excuse it, of course. But whether, you know, in social media, people say things that they might not say in public.
That was a question?
Well, yeah, sort of a half a question.
sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
I certainly think people sometimes say things on social media that they wouldn't say in public, and I certainly hope that some of this is just talk, right? What? Obviously, just because someone says something doesn't mean they would do it, and unfortunately, if someone makes a post and says, I'm a police officer and I would have shot that guy, unfortunately, you have to consider the fact that that might be right and that he might have shot that guy. And if that's true, then we need to have a conversation about that. But I certainly hope that some of this is hyperbolic. I don't think that means we don't need to talk about it. I don't think that means that it's not a problem. But I certainly hope that this is at least somewhat exaggerated, somewhat bravado.
Fair enough. And I do want to talk some more, Emily. Let's take a very short break. And that's Emily Baker-White, again, executive director of the Plain View Project. We've been talking about this project, made a lot of news in the last couple of days, looking at Facebook posts by police officers in a number of jurisdictions, including here in Philadelphia, raising a whole host of concerns about some of these rather disturbing posts and images that are posted on Facebook. We are also joined, he just slipped into his chair, Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, joining us after this very short break. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, again talking with Emily Baker-White, executive director of the Plain View Project, talking about this project that cataloged racist and sexist and violent images and text shared by police officers in a number of departments, including police officers here in Philadelphia. Some of the subsequent reporting found that some of the officers named in the report had high levels of civilian complaints against them. This has prompted an investigation by the Philadelphia Police Department, among others. Larry Krasner, as I said, just slipped into his seat. And Larry Krasner, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's always great to be here.
So what does this database mean to you?
Well, I mean, it means so many things, but just in terms of nuts and bolts, one of the things that it means is that we have an obligation under the U.S. Constitution to reveal information to the defense that may be helpful to them, so that they can at least make an argument to a judge that it's admissible in a courtroom. We have a thing that is commonly referred to as the do not call list. That is really not the right title for it. It's a list of officers who either my office is unwilling to call to testify because we believe there are serious credibility issues, or in the majority of cases, as to whom we're going to reveal information, right? And sometimes the information will apply in every category and sometimes just in some categories. Well, here we have a bunch of officers mm-hmm. who not only chose to tell us things, but they chose to tell the whole world things.
Because they posted it on Facebook.
That's right. You know, criminal justice really focuses on intent. And when you intend to say things to others and then you intend to say things to the whole world, you are identifying yourself, much in the same way you might be if you had a highly visible tattoo. Well, I think it matters if a police officer, and there is one, has a highly visible Nazi tattoo. And I think it matters if you are going to tell the world how you think. Why does it matter? All right. Well, just consider, for example, some of these postings are extremely hostile to Muslims. We're in a city where there are a large number of people who are Muslim, and there are a large number of people, including in the criminal justice system, whose names are associated with Islam, right? That's something that might show a bias, and under evidence law, bias is relevant. Not in every single situation all the time, but very often it is relevant. So if you're saying things that indicate you think violence against women is okay, you think violence against Muslims is okay, you think Muslims are, quote, savages, unquote, if you're saying things like this, these are things that we are going to need to catalog. We're going to need to put it on our list and make individualized decisions. But an awful lot of this is going to have to be turned over because it shows bias. Mm-hmm. And that is something that has always been contained within our list.
Well, as you mentioned, the list, meaning people that you'd either have to share this information with the defense or you would not put them on the stand for fear that these beliefs that are now public would really discredit them as a witness.
Well, it's fair to consider. I mean, if someone really wants to be known
right.
for hating Muslims, and that person, let's just say, happens to be a homicide detective who is investigating a man whose name is Yusuf Islam, well, that it seems to me like that might be highly relevant to people considering whether or not they're going to believe an extremely important point in the case. That's not necessarily my decision. That's a decision for a judge. But
right.
but if we never tell the defense about that fact, which we know, then we, as prosecutors, are violating the Constitution.
Emily, I'll get back to you in just one second. What about the First Amendment? I mean, the right for people to speak their mind, to say horrible things.
Well, no one is saying they've committed crimes by saying horrible things on Facebook. I mean, obviously, there can be exceptions if you're actually inciting people to get together and do something violent. But right. in general, you can say some pretty horrible things in the United States that you cannot, for example, say in Germany anymore. And let us not forget where that came from, right? No one in the DA's office is saying let's arrest all these officers mm-hmm. for saying really, really offensive things. We're simply saying if you want the whole world to know you that way, then we are not going to hide that from the defense when the U.S. Constitution says we must reveal it.
Emily, let me go back to you, and we're hearing from the Philadelphia District Attorney. I'm wondering from other cities what kind of response you have gotten either from police chiefs or mayors or district attorneys.
I want to go back real quick.
Sure, go ahead.
And just say this is something that we didn't expressly talk about, and I do want to make it clear before we move on that all of the posts that the Plainview Project captured were posted on Facebook with a public setting, which means they were visible to anyone on Facebook. For anyone who's listening, I realize that one can post just to one's friends or just to a certain selected audience. We have no idea what these officers are sharing only with friends or only with a selected audience. These are all public-facing posts. Didn't mean to not answer the question, though.
No, that's okay. And that's an important point, which is they put it out there for the rest of us to see.
Sure, absolutely. We've received very strong responses across the board from jurisdictions that are looking into this. It really feels like police chiefs, mayors, internal affairs folks across the board are concerned and are trying to get to the bottom of this in each of the jurisdictions that we've looked at. And that's really heartening.
I'm wondering, Larry Krasner, whether if you've had conversations with Commissioner Ross, with the mayor about these posts.
I've had a chance to speak to the commissioner, although not at length, mm-hmm. about the posts. Spoke with the mayor yesterday about other things, but not this. It's, and I'm trying to be respectful of the fact that it will be up to the commissioner to decide what firings or discipline may be appropriate. I am not looking at a bunch of posts that appear to be crime. So obviously mm-hmm. we're going to go through everything very carefully. But that's not what I'm looking at. So my role is quite different. My role is really not to suggest that I should control the police in any way. My role is just to make sure that constitutional obligations so that we have fair trials are met.
Let me read some comments here. One from Mike regarding the report. How were the officers identified as active duty officers? I know a lot of officers who change their names on Facebook for safety reasons. Let me toss that to you, Emily, about how you figured out who these people were, whether they were still active duty, whether they had retired. How were you able to get that information?
Sure. So we started out by getting the public record rosters of police officers who are currently employed by the city of Philadelphia. Philly.com actually has a database that they update once a quarter, but one can also request that in a public records request. That's how we got the rosters for each of the jurisdictions. And one important note, if an officer left the force 3 weeks ago, we mm-hmm. don't know that, right? Our information is public only as of the time that we received responses to our public records request, and I've made that clear on our website. We are not 100% up to date at this second. But we got these rosters of who is employed by each police department, and then we went on Facebook and we looked for folks in the same location with the same name who might possibly be the person on the roster. Obviously, that's not enough. There are loads of people with loads of common names. So we then looked on a person's public page for some sort of confirmation that that person was employed by a given police department. The most common way that we found that verification is there's a place on Facebook where you can list your employer. And many people just listed police officer at Philadelphia Police Department in that slot, and we considered that sufficient.
It's amazing that in 2016, 17, 18, 19, that people do not know that.
Many people did post that information.
Yeah.
Many other people might not have done that, but they posted a picture of themselves in uniform with their badge or some other clear police department event, a plaque with their name on it, something like that. And so a lot of people identified themselves as police officers in other ways.
Larry Krasner, let me go back to you, and then we're going to have to let you go. And we've got two more guests who I know are chomping at the bit to join our conversation. This is something that BuzzFeed wrote. Of the 328 officers in Philadelphia who posted troubling content, more than a third, 139 officers, appeared to have had one or more federal civil rights lawsuits filed against them based on name, badge number, and other corroborating detail. Now, I was not able to corroborate that separate from BuzzFeed, but just reading what they wrote there, does that raise some concerns for your office?
I mean, honestly, that particular statistic was the biggest punch in the gut to me when I read it, because we do know that on Facebook and other social media platforms, people bloviate. Maybe they say some stuff when they had two beers. It's just so easy when you're communicating in this way that feels anonymous to be hyperbolic and so on. But what that statistic means is these aren't just words. There are not that many civil rights lawsuits brought against the police. They are not that lucrative. You do not have a voracious personal injury bar doing this. When you see that level, and I say this as someone who used to file these lawsuits as an aspect of my law practice, when you see that level of connection between the words and the actions, that's a real problem.
And is that where, you know, this First Amendment thing goes away and something more with more teeth comes in?
I don't think the First Amendment thing ever goes away. You know, I think that these officers, just like the rest of us, are enjoying the benefit of being able to say almost anything, being able to say crazy in terms of, you know, avoiding any sort of criminal prosecution or restriction by the government. That does not mean that in a professional capacity they can say whatever they want. It does not mean that they can represent the Philadelphia Police Department as being a bunch of bigots who advocate illegal violence, who advocate the abuse of women, who think it's funny to test a lie. There is nothing about becoming a police officer that allows them to use the First Amendment as a shield so they can advocate violating the requirements of their job all the time, every day.
Larry Krasner, thank you for coming in. And again, he is Philadelphia District Attorney joining us on Radio Times. Emily Baker-White, we have to say goodbye to you as well. Any final thoughts before we move on to our other two guests?
I would just say thank you to Larry and to all the public officials who have seen this report and are really doing what they can to try to take action and make our police system stronger across the country.
Well,
that's why we did this, and it looks like that's happening.
Well, I appreciate that you did it as well. And Emily Baker White, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And again, she is executive director of the Plainview Project. You can join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. To join our conversation, and let me introduce our two guests who slipped into their chairs just a couple of minutes ago. Hans Menos is the executive director of the Philadelphia Police Advisory Commission. Hans Menos, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Jerry Ratcliffe is with us as well. He's a former British police officer, a professor of criminal justice at Temple University, and host of the Reducing Crime podcast. Jerry Ratcliffe, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Another police scandal, another visit.
Well, there you go. And it is a police scandal. And Hans Menos, let me get a response from you. You've, I'm sure, looked at this website, looked at the data, read a lot of these posts.
A great deal of them, yes.
What's your response? What does that tell you?
Well, you know, in policing, we offer police officers a great deal of power over our everyday life. We hand over a great deal of our civil liberties to police officers on a daily basis. They are the one public official that could take away life and liberty, and they are sometimes asked and charged to do that. And we ask for really one thing as a result of that. We ask for them to be legitimate. We ask for them to use that power and to be someone that we can trust and not violate that trust after we've handed it over to them.
And you're saying that by reading this, those posts violate people's trust?
This is an absolute violation of the public trust. There's really no other way to say it. These are folks who are saying, as we've already kind of highlighted, that extrajudicial violence is okay, that racism is okay, and that being a racial bigot is okay. And this is how they want to operate, and that they should be thanked for it. That's some of these posts suggest that as well. The idea that it's hyperbolic to me doesn't really matter. Let's suppose that it is. Let's say that these cops are...
They're mouthing off.
Yeah,
they're venting.
They're just venting. I would say that it speaks much more to the psychology. And there's a few folks who have what seem like thoughtful people responding to their posts saying, this is wrong. You know, you shouldn't be doing this. And you see a doubling down. So it's tough for me to buy into, at least those folks, at least, that they're just being hyperbolic because they're pushing back against folks who push back against them. So we have a real problem with legitimacy and with the idea that our police department is out, can be trusted, or at least these officers can be trusted to really further the public good.
Jerry Ratcliffe, let me get your response. You've read through them. What do you see? What is it telling us?
Oh, look, I agree with much of what's been said. I think much of the content and the associated comments are entirely inappropriate and they can't be justified, endorsed, or supported in any circumstances. So I just want to be clear up front that I'm not supporting any of what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some concerns about the criteria that for the inclusion here, because it seems awfully subjective. And as a researcher, we would never get away with approaching it from this kind of level of perspective. Because some of it is just venting and some of it is people working in social groups. And some of it seems to be, I mean, not all of it. There's a lot of it that's very wrong. So I'm not supporting any of this. But some of it seems to be if you don't kind of agree with a political persuasion or you don't necessarily agree with the humor content that necessarily occurs with the people who are reviewing this, they're putting this on this website. And while Emily said this is the start of a conversation, I think what we've already just heard from Larry Krasner, that it's if you're getting put on the do not call list, that has career implications for you. So it's almost the end of the conversation before there's been any conversation. Now, I'm not defending these officers by any stretch, but we have to be careful about how much we include with all of this.
Well, and I read about, you know, the sort of cop humor or black humor or the kind of humor that you might hear in an emergency room or in an operating theater where
Absolutely.
People say really horrible things, oftentimes as a stress reliever. How do we differentiate, I guess, between some of those posts that just seem to be in that category and some that seem to be really frankly, scary.
And that's the challenging thing to do, because everybody works in different circumstances. I've just numbers of years on the job, and they work in different groups and areas. There is a kind of gallows humor. You find it in policing. But if we're going to affect the careers of people for posting things that either we don't like their humor or we don't like their politics, that's going to affect half the police department, half the fire department, a bunch of medics, some college professors, some teachers, and pretty much anybody else who works extensively with the public, because, you know, the public can have their moments.
Well, I wonder, though, Hans, whether police are in a different category. I mean, they work with the public in this extremely unique way. Mm-hmm. And also, we talk a lot about police-community relations. I mean, that we want – that's a kind of policing that we want to support, where the police and the community can work together to get the bad guys, mm-hmm. so to speak. Does this hurt that?
Well, it's not my opinion, right? The police themselves say they are a higher calling. They are the better public servant. They're the folks that deserve more credibility and more thanks. So on the opposite side of that coin, they deserve higher level of scrutiny, and they deserve more attention to what they say. I absolutely agree with Jerry that we can't legislate and talk about folks based on their political opinions. And so I would agree that if someone's a Trump supporter, I might have some questions about what that means, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't have their job. But if someone is talking about in a really vitriolic, anti-Muslim, anti-black conversations, I frankly don't care if they're being hyperbolic. I think that they need to recognize that their role as a public servant, again, as someone who could take away life and liberty, is so serious that I'm okay with them losing their employment over that, or at least losing their power over that.
Well, let's take a very short break. I do want to pick up on that, and that's Hans Menos. He's executive director of the Philadelphia Police Advisory Commission. Also with us, Jerry Ratcliffe. He's a former British police officer. He's a professor of criminal justice at Temple University, host of a podcast called Reducing Crime. And again, we are talking about these offensive Facebook posts that were found and published by the Plain View Project, looking at 8 police departments across the country, including here in Philadelphia. What should we do about it? 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. It's, I typed out a bunch of the comments, and I'm kind of reluctant to read them at the same time. Trust me, they are offensive. And there are some comments there, and they generally are about adults who have abused children and what the police officers say about that. And although I have never said that on Facebook, I understand that. I understand the rage that one can feel. And I'm sure, Hans, that, you know, police see things every day that would just shock. Mm-hmm. I mean, that have to be shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And scary.
Absolutely.
And seeing sort of worst of what people can do.
Of course, yes. So I think the criticism there isn't that we don't understand the feeling, right? Yeah. I think I'm a father, too. I absolutely understand the feeling there. It's what it may mean. Are we looking at police officers that may be supporting, again, extrajudicial violence or street justice? So, I don't think any sympathy is lost for a pedophile. I don't think anyone's saying that police officers shouldn't have what the rest of us have for pedophiles, which is absolute disdain. And frankly, I do put them, if I had to, you know, kind of create a hierarchy, those comments at the lower end of the list. I'm mostly focused on the anti-religion and the anti-black, anti-brown and racist comments. But there is a conversation to be had about those as well in terms of what your role as a public official is, especially as a law enforcement official. And if you're calling for this type of justice as opposed to the justice that your agency or your city is meant to provide.
But do you think people should lose their job over this? And I should say there's going to be a rally tomorrow in front of the police department here, and people are calling for these officers identified to lose their jobs.
So, no, I don't think that every officer in this database needs to lose their job. I think that a thorough review is definitely necessary. I think that using this, as Jerry somewhat referenced, as one data point, and maybe other issues like how many complaints they have, how many lawsuits they have, and how many other issues might compound this post, is probably a smarter way to go about it. There are some folks that could be choir boys, but ultimately have some posts that are so terrible that I might want to have that conversation. But certainly a lot needs to go into that decision.
We need more information. Jerry, you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, Hans is, you know, he understands the feeling, but he's smart enough not to articulate it. And should that be the criteria that's different here, where some people articulated what they think and other people just think it?
Yes.
At that point, I wonder how much we're becoming the thought police. And a chunk of this is talking about, and Larry Krasner was talking about, how much these people are actually articulating their public position because they're posting these things publicly. But I think, as Emily articulated, she had to do a fair bit of digging to find out that these were police officers. And I think we're giving some of these guys far too much technical credibility and credit, because if anybody's trying to figure out all the different settings in Facebook, after a while it becomes just like iTunes terms and conditions. You scroll 45 pages and they just hit I accept.
So you may think you were talking privately, but obviously
and
not.
And it may be a difficult case for the police department to argue that these people were acting in a really public capacity. When you look at some of the memes that they're falling prey, I mean, it's almost childishly vulnerable, some of them, to some of the most stupid memes that are out there. Mm-hmm. One of them I discovered was fake by checking Snopes. That was one Google search in 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of almost childish vulnerability to some of this stuff. I'm not defending any of it, but I am saying it's, you know, this whole sense that they were explicitly articulating a public position may be a difficult one to argue.
Let me read some comments, and then Hans, I know you want to say something. Facebook comment from Danielle: why is it so complex to hold police accountable? Human decency isn't that high a bar. Fire them, no pension, done. Tweet from Adam: the Plainview revelations about the Philadelphia Police Department are also a reminder that the police contract is due to be renewed, and thus would be a good time to finally negotiate some consequences for bad cops. An email from Desmond: police officers are to be judged by a higher standard than the average person. Mm-hmm. Few people in society have the broad latitude and extraordinary powers possessed by the police. Hans, you agree?
I absolutely agree. Yeah, and I'd say, well, I appreciate Jerry's point on the idea that they may not have known this is public. I would say that it ultimately doesn't matter. Once it's out in the public sphere, no matter how it got out there, they've lost the public trust. And I think, as the district attorney referenced, they may be limited in how they can do their job, and that they literally may not be able to support the cases that they bring to court, and that they are actually a stain on the department as a result, and ultimately perhaps dead weight, maybe in the police department's version of the rubber room, ultimately.
Oh, where you just sit at a desk and sort of don't really...
If I can
carry out your duties.
I mean, I'm not the police commissioner, but I don't understand how these folks can be trusted. Not all of them. I know I'm speaking very broadly, but how a good portion of these folks can be continued to be relied upon to interact with the public.
Jerry, is this a matter of bad apples, as we sometimes say? Is it a matter of culture? We did invite the police commissioner to come on. He declined, respectfully, and the police department is looking into this, trying to figure out, obviously, what to do. What is it? A cultural? Is it a matter of training?
There are cultural issues around policing. There always have been. And I think that is an issue that definitely has to be looked at. The challenging thing about culture is before social media, we could often identify bad units, toxic units, where you had a few people that were influencing everybody else around them. And so you see with the Rampart scandal in Los Angeles and some of the recent work in Baltimore, you see units that are going off the rails. And it was easier for the police department to identify those because they're these social influence groups. But now with social media, you don't need to be in the same unit. It could be somebody you met at the police academy that you're now Facebook friends with, or you follow on Twitter, and you never work in the same part of the city or the same unit. So now it's harder to track down these groups because they've become sort of less geographically or less unit focused. The other aspect to it is, two of the things that the people catching up with you on Facebook or Twitter were arguing about, human decency is one of those issues that definitely permeates through this. But police officers, especially in some parts of the city, don't see a lot of human decency. They often see quite the reverse. And this is one of the challenging things that's come out of policing in the last few years, is because this gallows humor is a coping mechanism for people across the emergency services. And only recently in policing we're starting to pay any attention to sort of wellness and officer safety, especially mental health care. So prior to this, you know, you're looking at officers, especially if they're retired, that spent 30 years with no coping mechanisms other than gallows humor, alcohol, depression, PTSD, and suicide.
Mm-hmm.
that's how we've dealt with stuff. So now we are trying to improve some of these mechanisms, but we're awfully late to this in policing.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. Here's a call from Patrick. When does venting end and real harm begin? Such a good question. Most of these cops are white, and saying these things against people of color, this needs to be taken seriously. Hans?
I mean, I absolutely agree. I think we just have to figure out what taken seriously means. Right. And I think, you know, to Jerry's point, there's a lot of conversation around how this is a policing problem. But police come from where? I mean, they're not especially birthed to become police officers, right? These are citizens and residents of our country. And if you look at these Facebook posts, the names that are blacked out, that means those are the non-cops. And those, right. And they're joining in just as much and saying sometimes even worse things. So I don't mean to imply that this is a policing problem only. I think that other industries, for instance, would be able to more easily root those folks out. For instance, if you worked for a child welfare agency and you decided that you wanted to post racism on Facebook, you'd be probably gotten rid of pretty easily.
Sure.
And so that it does bring into question the transparency of the discipline process, the accountability process, the supervision in the police department, and, of course, the elephant in the room, the union. What's the union going to say about these things?
Well, and I quoted John McNesby, and again, we asked him to join us. The declined president of the FOP said he strongly condemns violence and racism.
Does
and
he
then
support them being dismissed?
Well, I mean, is that the criteria then?
Yes. If he says the majority of officers do their job every day, and I'm paraphrasing now, and that they are good officers who do have no hate in their heart, then his duty is to them. His duty is to the majority of the officers, and he should not be spending any time or money defending these other folks that he says are part of the whole.
You want to add to that, Jerry? And we should say we're talking about several hundred police officers,
yeah.
A variety of different kinds of comments, some clearly deeply disturbing, in a department of about 6,500 people. So how do we do the math on that?
Well, the math is tricky because we're only seeing a small portion of what's going on. We have, I mean, we're seeing a chunk, and it's obviously significantly concerning. But if we were to, I mean, if I was to write this as a journal article, it wouldn't get published in the most lax, worst article in my field, or I certainly hope it wouldn't be. So what we end up with is that the evidence, there's really no evidence as of yet that I would consider bankable, that the thoughts that these people have translates into behavior. Okay, because all we're seeing is what we would call in the research field confirmation bias. We're seeing the officers that have been identified as negative Facebook posts and then following through to see what their complaint history is and their background is. What we're not seeing are all the officers that don't post right. any negative stuff, and we don't see we could find that they could have exactly the same discipline history, exactly the same kinds of problems as well. We don't know if this is representative or if these people are outliers. Mm. So we don't know if there's no strong evidence, I would argue, as of yet, that these thoughts and opinions that are often believed to be privately shared mm-hmm. have any impact yeah. on the officer's actual behavior, how they report crimes, how they deal with traffic accidents.
Mm. And that's really the critical issue, is how one behaves on the job. Here's an email from Bill. He says, growing up in the 70s in a mostly white school, a kid called me the N-word. I learned later that he joined the police force. Should a black person feel safe in this town? Hans, can I put that to you?
So, I mean, I do believe that people should feel safe in this town. I'm not trying to suggest that we don't have a police force that can protect our citizens or our residents. I'm saying that what we have is a police force that needs to take a really hard inward look. And frankly, a citizenry that may need to consider not relying on the police as much. Why are we calling the police for neighbor disputes? And why are we introducing them?
If not
them?
The police, then who do you rely on?
Well, you know, that could be it's a conversation about the failing of government as well, right? So we definitely need more folks that we can call. There are other agencies that we can call, for instance, for neighbor disputes. And there's also, you can talk to someone on your own. We had two young men in Starbucks in April of last year.
Absolutely.
Who were removed because of what they were doing, because of an act that almost all of us have done. I know I've done it. You go there and you don't buy anything. And right. they were arrested as a result. And the manager there, her principal failing was that she failed to talk to these people like human beings. She solves problems by calling men with guns. And that's something that we all need to think about internally as well, because the police are too often called to solve all of our problems. The PAC just put out a report on the canine encounters or dog shootings, what we're kind of more commonly known as. And the question becomes, why are the police the folks who get called when there's a dog loose on the street?
Huh.
You know?
Interesting. And so you think people are, in a sense, overusing the police or using them where perhaps it's not appropriate?
We certainly need other services to show up, right? We need more robust investment in, for instance, our animal care and control so they can do that type of thing. Or you know, other problem solvers that can show up to these places. You know, Dr. Phil Goff kind of once opined that, imagine we had a social work squad that you can call if you had a problem that wasn't lethal, and they could show up and solve a problem. It's a bit idealistic, but it's worth thinking about.
So thinking beyond what police officers are called to do, Jerry?
I joined the police service about 35 years ago. And in that 30, yeah.
Feeling, you're that old,
it's,
right?
It's not the age, it's the mileage. Over that period of time, policing has changed drastically. Okay, and so as other social services have contracted, we've asked police to fill a gap that they were never trained for, absolutely, that they were never expected to do.
Yes.
And if you joined the police service 30 years ago, as a lot of our leadership team, you were never expected to deal with this kind of work. So there's a huge adaptation taking place. Mental health is one of those areas. 30 years ago, two-thirds of the spending on mental health in the United States was on residential and inpatient treatment with professionals. Now that's only one-third. That extra third of spending has not gone on outpatient treatment. It's gone on retail prescription drugs, which has shifted all the supervision of people with behavioral health issues onto the police. And that's not a police job. So we have to decide, you know, if we don't want the police to do less, we have to invest in these other areas and take the burden away. Because in the meantime, all we're doing is putting more and more and more on the police. And it increases that sense of that, where that gallows humor comes from, because police officers are having to deal with all of the worst issues in society.
Well, I'm thinking you're head of the Police Advisory Commission. If I'm living in a high crime area of Philadelphia and I read what's on these Facebook posts from this project, I'm going to be pretty disturbed.
Disturbed, concerned, or fearful? Yeah, all of those things. Absolutely. Depending on who you are. I think that if we think back to the Furman tapes, right, which were the famous tapes after the O.J. Simpson trial, there was a group of people who were shocked, and there was a group of people in the black community that said, yeah, well, we knew that already, right? Mm-hmm. And so these Facebook posts are, you know, analogous to that. I would argue worse because it's not one cop, although I take Jerry's point that this isn't great data.
Right.
But regardless of any of that, there are folks who said to me, well, yeah, I knew the police officers were racist and had these kinds of ways of speaking. And there are other folks who are floored by this. And so it speaks to a lot of issues about, I think, as you referenced, that it's really only people in certain communities that are really most concerned about this. And I'll say it more directly, in black and brown communities, right, who are more concerned about these. And,
There's more interaction with the police.
There's more interaction with the police. And these are the folks that clearly the police officers have already given kind of a community level understanding amongst these folks that they don't trust them.
Right.
And now there's almost a codified, and I say almost because I respect Jerry's opinion on that and he's correct, but there is more tangible evidence, I'll say, mm-hmm, of this racism and bias. I guess I'm taken by this idea that some folks are upset by this, but not shocked. Other folks are upset by this, but completely shocked.
Oh, interesting. 30 seconds. Any final thoughts, Jerry?
No, not really much. I think that one of the unfortunate ironies here is that Emily talked about, you know, all of these posts are destroying public trust. Yeah. In actual fact, most of them were so difficult to find. By bringing it to light, she's probably ironically destroyed public trust in policing in Philadelphia more so than any of the individual posters or group of posters can. But it's important to shed light on this,
right,
and this should be the start of a conversation. It shouldn't be you're on the do not call list, you're getting fired tomorrow, because then we've never had that conversation.
Right.
It's another knee-jerk reaction to a policing issue.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you both joined us on Radio Times. Jerry Ratcliffe, thanks for coming in. And again, he's a professor of criminal justice at Temple University. Hans Minos, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you, Marty.
And he's executive director of the Philadelphia Police Advisory Commission. Well, today marks the 75th anniversary of D-Day, and when we remember the sacrifices of the thousands who fought, died, and survived the battle to defeat the Nazis and to liberate Europe. French President Macron gave a moving speech this morning saying that France has not forgotten what happened 75 years ago. Here's a short excerpt, and it's translated.
On behalf of my country, on behalf of France, I bow down before their bravery. I bow down before the immense sacrifice of the 37,000 killed, the 19,000 reported missing who died as heroes in Normandy between June and August 1944,
and
who, for many, were to rest there for eternity. I bow down to our veterans,
je dis merci,
and I say thank you.
We know what we owe to you, veterans, our freedom. On behalf of my nation, I just want to say thank you.